Good evening. Welcome everyone to the Simple Actions group of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is Amy and I am an alcoholic. Housekeeping. We will only be recording and publishing the audio portion of this meeting. You can also sign up for email on our website at simpleactions.net. For those who care to join us, let's open the meeting with the Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance tonight. Newcomers, is there anyone in their first 30 days of sobriety? We would like to welcome you. Anyone can use the chat function to send their phone number to the newcomer privately. Are there any hands up? I don't see any hands up. No? Okay. Preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of people who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not affiliated with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. This evening, we are discussing step one, the second part regarding mental obsession. Please welcome our panel this evening. We have Elaine from Williamsburg and Joe from Virginia Beach. I will read the first paragraph on page 41, and then the panel will share for a few minutes each on the reading. Step one, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. Oh, I'm on the wrong page. Okay, there it is. Pardon me. Page five. I woke up. This had to be stopped. I saw I could not take so much as one drink. I was through forever. Before then, I had written lots of sweet promises, but my wife happily observed that this time I meant business. And so I did. Shortly afterward, I came home drunk. There had been no fight. Where had been my high resolve? I simply didn't know. It hadn't even come to mind. Someone had pushed a drink my way and I had taken it. Was I crazy? I began to wonder, for such an appalling lack of perspective seemed near being just that. Renewing my resolve, I tried again. Some time passed and confidence began to be replaced by cocksureness. I could laugh at the gin mills. Now I had what it takes. One day, I walked into a cafe to telephone. In no time, I was beating on the bar, asking myself how it happened. As the whiskey rose to my head, I told myself I would manage better next time, but I might as well get good and drunk then. And I did. Elaine, would you like to go ahead and start?
Hey, Elaine, absolutely an alcoholic. Just for the people who don't know, my sobriety date is November 6, 2008. I have a home group. They know I'm a part of their home group, shoulder to shoulder in Yorktown, probably the best, and you should join. I'm very emotional and semi-unstable, so I'm probably going to cry at some point in one of my shares. So we'll just hold on tight and get through this together. This passage that we just read reminds me of two things. I was like, I thought deeply in love. And my partner left me. And at the time, I couldn't understand why. And I've shared this with people. I couldn't understand why at the time. I thought he was a jerk. How dare him? You know, and thank God I did a ninth step. And thank God I asked in that ninth step, is there anything I left out? Because I was a blackout drinker from the start. I blacked out from the very first day I took more than 2 drinks, you know? And in a blackout, I don't know about you, but I don't know what's going on. And he helped show me what I didn't know about my disease, what he was living with each day. Okay. You know, the promises that, oh, it'll be better. I won't drink as much. You know, he left me because he got sick of wondering if I was dead or alive every time he came home. And now I didn't know that about my alcoholism. I had no idea that that's what somebody was living with, you know? And so the first part of that, you know, making promises that, could I have kept any of those promises? I don't know about your disease, but no, it was not in my power alone to keep any of those promises. And the one that hit me the most is when it talks about banging on the bar. And I remember when I first came in, and I did not come in on my own, the court helped me get in here. So that lets you know I did not want to be here. This was not my solution. This was not going to save me or solve my problems or help keep my lights on. I mean, that's where I was when I walked in, you know, and because alcohol wasn't the problem. And then, you know, I would read these, or you guys would read this book to me, because I would go to literature meetings, you know, I'd go anywhere where I didn't have to do anything. And I read that and I was like, oh, I've had those moments. I've had those moments that my disease helped me easily forget, easily look over a time and time again, sitting at the bar, knowing that very morning, I mean, coughing up foam, because that's all that's in my body, thinking I got the mixture wrong. I don't need to drink tonight. And before I know it, I got a drink in my hand and I'm like, whoa, wait a minute. I really meant it. I really meant I wasn't going to drink. What's going on? And like that. My disease is like, nope, everything's fine. What are you talking about? Just have a drink. It was a long day. I'm the best judge. I'm the best person to justify anything. And I still live with that today. Oh man, I can justify anything. I deserve it. I had a long day. I deserve it. Ooh, those things will kill. I gotta be careful of that stuff. I don't know how long I share. I want to hear Joe. So I think that's all I've got on this one. Thanks.
Thanks, Elaine.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
All right. My name is Joe Sprucebank and I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is November 24th, 1991. First off, I want to thank Amy for asking me to share with you all tonight. I have to admit, though, I'm kind of in the doghouse. I do shift work and my schedule is constantly changing every week. So when she asked me about 3 weeks ago, I had to get back to her. And unbeknownst to me, when I agreed to do this, I forgot today was Valentine's Day. So I promised my wife that I would take her to a new movie that came out this weekend when we talked about it about 5 or 6 weeks ago. I completely forgot about this. So anyway, I'm kind of in the doghouse and I think I'll get out of it, but we'll see. Task at hand. So, you know, this reading, you know, Bill was sincere when he was making these promises this time. This time he meant it. He was serious. And he realized that he had hit rock bottom. And he had no choice but to do whatever he had to take to make things work.
Joe, you just froze. You might want to cut your video if that's contributing to the technical difficulty. Or am I the one that has technical difficulty? Oh, there you are.
My computer froze. Anyway, I was saying that, you know, Bill was sincere about his promise and then something happened. And, you know, you all know what happens when we get ourselves into a jackpot where we start thinking, you know, we start drinking again. And Bill had to eat some humble pie again. And, you know, he was, once again, he was serious and he thought he had what it took, you know, willpower. He could manage better next time. But then again, something happened and he started drinking again. And he, you know, once he started drinking, he was like, screw it. I'm going to get good and drunk this time and I'll try harder next time. And, you know, this whole passage implies willpower. And I am a very strong-willed person, except for when it comes to combating alcoholism. I can't do it by myself. I've tried. And I've tried to stop drinking on my own, and I inevitably get drunk again. I'm either a miserable, dry drunk, or eventually I pick up and I drink again. And the will is just not there once I start drinking again. Yeah, this passage reminds me of a time back in my first sobriety date was August 28th, 1989. And the year before that, it was Super Bowl, 1988 Super Bowl. It was the Broncos and the Washington Redskins. And what we used to do with my friends and everything, we'd start drinking about 10, 11, 12 o'clock, and then we'd be nice and prime by the time the Super Bowl came on at 6 o'clock. Well, 1988, I swore I wasn't going to drink because my dad was an alcoholic and I was starting to follow in his footsteps. My mom would say some things to me, you know, you're just like your father when you drink. And it was kind of nagging in the back of my head. And I was going to do something about it. So I did. I promised myself I wasn't going to drink during the Super Bowl festivities. And I didn't. And I did great. Watched the game. In fact, I did so well that up to the point of halftime, I rewarded myself with a drink, one drink. And then I was off to the races. I don't remember the rest of the game. I don't know who won. I don't even remember how I got home that night. But that's what happens when I try to control the situation with my willpower. And as we're, you know, going to see in the further readings, that I need something bigger and better than myself. I need a higher power in my life. And that's enough out of me. Next.
Thanks, Joe. We're going to continue reading on page 7. It relieved me somewhat to learn that in alcoholics, the will is amazingly weakened when it comes to combating liquor, though it often remains strong in other respects. My incredible behavior in the face of a desperate desire to stop was explained. Understanding myself now, I fared forth in high hope. For 3 or 4 months, the goose hung high. I went to town regularly and even made a little money. Surely this was the answer, self-knowledge. Elaine?
So I've got a little different experience. Like I had shared, I'm sorry, my cats are psycho. When I came in, this is how cunning, baffling, and powerful this disease is for me. Okay. I don't know about you, but for me, okay. I had no idea that alcohol was a problem, or at least my disease would not allow me to see it. I never thought it was. I truly, truly thought it was saving my life. Absolutely, in every way. There was never a time, there was one time that I tried to stop drinking for 30 days, but that was so I didn't go back in the mental institution. And I picked up a nasty habit of another kind. But I never thought that stopping drinking would be a great idea. Okay. Or solve any things. So self-knowledge, I didn't understand any of this when I came in. Right. And so there were no trial periods for me when I came in. Now, when I did come in, I had said that I had, you know, I've got some outside issues, as some of you know. And so I had this amazing burning bush, if you will, I guess. I don't know what you'll call it. I had gone 3 days without thinking about suicide. And that may not seem like that much, but I came in when I was, 26? And my first time I tried to commit suicide, I think I was 16. So for 10 years, I was really trying, because that was my solution, mind you. Because I didn't know about alcoholism. I didn't know cunning, baffling, powerful. I had no idea what was going on. I thought I had mental issues. And if I could just figure out how to kill myself, then everything would be great. That was my solution. Okay. Until I came into AA and I was like, oh my God, what is going on? There's another way, you know? You know, when I came in and I used to fantasize about it, I would wake up in the morning and I'd start crying because I'd be like, oh, I got to do this again. And I'd beat myself up because I couldn't get it right. you know? So when I came in and I went 3 days free of that. I don't know. Come on, guys. Oh my gosh. I'm so sorry. My cats. I'm so sorry. That was so embarrassing. You know, I don't know if you've ever thought about it once. And the weight of that decision, right? And I was ready. I was ready to go. Oh, all I have to do at the time, I thought all I have to do is not drink. And I don't have to live like that, wanting to kill myself every single day. I was ready. And I watched everybody, you know, and everybody that was going back out watched. And I asked, well, why'd you go back out? What'd you stop doing? And it was usually they stopped doing something. And I got crazy pretty quick about AA. I'm one of those nutcases, you know, because I was like, I'm sorry, wait a minute. There's another way to live life. There's another life out there. Because again, I had never seen it. I had never heard about it. I had never thought about it. Why would you dare think about it? This is what I've got. This is what I got to live, right? I mean, that was the world I was in. And all of a sudden, y'all were opening up a new world that I just did not know existed. So for me, you know, that self-knowledge, I picked up on that quick because I watched all of you. What were you doing? Who was making it? Who wasn't? Who was happy? You know, who wasn't happy? Who was crying? Who was laughing? Who was getting through? Who wasn't? You know, who would still look like it hurt? Man, I got crazy about AA just as, because you all said, you know, you were willing to go to any length for a drink or a drug. Why would it, your recovery be any different? And, you know, for me, I mean, that was my story. And that's not everybody's story, you know, but so self-knowledge, I knew off the bat. You know, and I had great, amazing, strong women that did not mind hurting my feelings. And I learned real quick, my first thought was wrong, and it was probably always going to be wrong, and I better get okay with that. And I've shared enough. But yeah, that this alone, I could talk about a lot. Self-knowledge, man, that's a slippery slope. And that, I think that can be a solution to death, a very slow alcoholic death, which I don't want today. So I gladly step aside and say, I don't have any idea of what's going on. I can barely have my own life together. I surely can't have yours. I have no self-knowledge. Y'all put me together and gave me the life I have today. All right, I'm out.
Thanks, Elaine.
This passage, self-knowledge. Self-knowledge is dangerous for me. It'll get me drunk. And it did. I gave you my first original sobriety day. You know, I got sober at a young age, 23, through a series of bad breaks and misunderstandings. I found the rooms. And when I first got sober, I'm from Baltimore originally, and I got sober up in York, Pennsylvania, extended treatment. And I later moved up there, and I took a job up there and everything. And I was going to meetings when it was convenient for me. I had a sponsor, but I didn't really use them. I would act like I was happy around you, but I really wasn't. You know, all these little things. And I got restless, irritable, and discontented that the book talks about. And I decided to see the world and I joined the Navy. Probably around January of 91, I stopped going to meetings. I have this self-knowledge. You people have taught me the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Thank you very much. Have a nice life. That was my attitude. And joined the Navy. Went away to boot camp in March of 91. Went to my school after that. Probably in my first week of school, I was hanging out with the fleet returnees. And after school, they'd go to the bar and I wanted to fit in. And I'd be sitting there watching them drink and have fun while I'm drinking ginger ale and Diet Coke. And, you know, poor me. And then it was pour me another drink. Because I eventually succumbed to it. And I did what drunks do best. I drank. Thank God that lasted only about 5 months. And then I found the rooms of AA again, of all places in Sasebo, Japan, my first duty station. And I'll be forever grateful for that. The one thing I must always remember is that, you know, I can know the big book inside and out, but unless I apply the principles to my life, it's still largely theoretical, you know, and I've proved it. And I've been around long enough. I've heard and I've seen a lot of other people prove it to themselves as well. The other thing I realized too is that I can't think my way into a better way of living. I have to live my way into a better way of thinking. I've got to do these things. There is no ifs, ands, or buts. I've got to do these things. Because remember, I'm dealing with an illness that only a spiritual experience will solve. And I have to always remember that, you know, even though I've been sober, you know, over 30 years, I still have to do this one day at a time. And I have to apply these principles in my life. I hope that I never graduate from Alcoholics Anonymous. I hope I'm still teachable, you know, in the years I have left to come. So that's enough out of me. Thanks.
Thanks, Joe. The next reading is on page 24. The fact is that most alcoholics, for reasons yet obscure, have lost the power of choice in drink. Our so-called willpower becomes practically non-existent. We are unable, at certain times, to bring into our consciousness with sufficient force the memory of the suffering and humiliation of even a week or a month ago. We are without defense against the first drink. The almost certain consequences that follow taking even a glass of beer do not crowd into the mind to deter us. If these thoughts occur, they are hazy and readily supplanted with the old threadbare idea that this time we shall handle ourselves like other people. There is a complete failure of the kind of defense that keeps one from putting his hand on a hot stove. Elaine?
Oh, I just had a thought too. So like I was saying, you know, I'm huge in how it works. I was taught really early on, you know, memorize how it works. That's how it works. You know, every time they read it, don't be looking around, open up the book, read along, get it on your phone, you know, constantly just being how it works. And, you know, and the whole cutting, baffling, and powerful, right? So when I'm out there, I had no idea. I was so blinded. I had absolutely no idea what was going on. And I was really big into blacking out. That's not how you should say that. But when I would remember, man, I'd push that away. And of course, my disease is helping me. I don't know that. I don't know that it has that power, right? But it's helping me justify any memory I do have. Or if someone brought something up, I would quickly shut them up. I'd be like, I don't want to hear it, whatever, blah, 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 blah. And so I would never acknowledge what was really going on. And if it was a horrific night, which I had many, I would justify it. I would justify it. Yet again, another reason why, you know, the more I learn about myself, thank you, through the steps, that was my experience with the help of a sponsor, right? The more I learned about myself and my disease, the more I realized self-knowledge, please. Oh my God. Because I'd get in these crazy situations and then I'd wake up the next morning and be like, oh, well, yeah, that was super scary, but I don't know, this factor and that factor, it won't happen again, right? And which leads me into, the first year of my sobriety, I'm an alcoholic. I thought about drinking, of course. You know what I mean? And I hit that for a really long time. Thankfully, I had a home group, hint, hint, because I couldn't say it in a meeting. You know, I'm not sharing. I didn't want to tell anybody because I thought I was messing something up. And then all of a sudden I squeaked it out at a home group, you know, business meeting or whatever. And of course, everyone started laughing because they're like, yeah, you're an alcoholic. You're going to think about drinking, you know, why don't we talk about it and not hide it? Secrets kill, you know? But that first year, every single time I thought about picking up anything, cause I'm a trash can, I would think about a really terrible event, day, night, morning, didn't really matter when I drank. I was a daily drinker, so I didn't run out. The sad thing was I never ran out of really horrible thoughts, you know, play the tape through, see the night out, you know. I never ran out of really terrible, terrible experiences. And I kept reminding myself, nothing says that if I pick up, I'm not going to have that night. And that scared me. Because by the end of my drinking, I could have two drinks or I could have 20. And I had no idea what was going to happen. Talk about messing with your drinking. You know, I didn't know if two were going to take me out or 20 wasn't going to take me anywhere. And that's a really scary thought, you know? And so I really hung on to that and it really helped me. And that might not help everybody. You know, everybody's got their own path, but yeah, I mean, that's what I did with that because I just never knew. That's all I got. Joe?
You know, this passage, we're without defense against that first drink. At the end of the passages that were selected tonight, and at the end of, I think it's chapter 3, more about alcoholism, I think it's page 43, it talks about that defense must come from a higher power. And I'm bodily and mentally different from a normal person. You know, I have a body that can't handle a drink or a drug and a mind that wants to keep denying and trying. And the only solution I've learned over the years is total abstinence, working the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and trusting God, as I don't always understand them. In the doctor's opinion, you know, it talks about the body of an alcoholic is quite as abnormal as his mind, and that I have an allergy to alcohol. And I think it's something like, you know, I can't handle a drink or drug, and an abnormal reaction that maybe nine out of 10 people have. Well, I'm one of those. I have that abnormal reaction. I don't see things the way other people do. My perception is all screwed up. And I thought alcohol would make it better. You know, it would enable me to do things that I didn't like to do when I was sober. And somewhere along the way, it turned on me like a boomerang and it cut me in half. My best friend became my worst enemy. And I didn't see it. It was so subtle, so cunning, baffling, and powerful that it talks about. I want to read something from the doctor's opinion. Basically why I drank. It says men and women drink essentially because they like the effect produced by alcohol. The sensation is so elusive that while they admit it is injurious, they cannot after a time differentiate the true from the false. To them, their alcoholic life seems the only normal one. They are restless, irritable, and discontented unless they can again experience a sense of ease and comfort, which comes at once by taking a few drinks, which they see others taking with impunity. After they have succumbed to the desire again, as so many do, and the phenomenon of craving develops, they pass through the well-known stages of a spree, emerging remorseful with a firm resolution not to drink again. This is repeated over and over, and unless the person can experience an entire psychic change, there is very little hope of his recovery. You know, it talks about the phenomenon of craving. I've got this thing called a mental obsession, and when I get the thought implanted in my head about a drink, and how I'm going to have this sense of ease and comfort, I can't shut my mind off until I physically put it into my body. And then once I physically put it into my body, I'm off to the races again. The mental obsession is stopped for a time being, but I can't stop drinking. And I never realized that until I came to the room of Alcoholics Anonymous. Somewhere along the way in my sobriety, I believe God removed the obsession for me to drink. And that is priceless. I'm sure you've all experienced it. I don't think about alcohol the way I used to. I have a healthy respect for it today. And I'll be forever grateful for that. You know, I don't have that mental obsession when it comes to wanting to drink. So that's it.
Thanks, Joe. Our next reading is on page 30. Most of us have been unwilling to admit we were real alcoholics. No person likes to think he is bodily and mentally different from his fellows. Therefore, it is not surprising that our drinking careers have been characterized by countless vain attempts to prove we could drink like other people. The idea that somehow, someday, he will control and enjoy his drinking is the great obsession of every abnormal drinker. The persistence of this illusion is astonishing. Many pursue it into the gates of insanity or death. We learned that we had to fully concede to our innermost selves that we were alcoholics. This is the first step in recovery. The delusion that we are like other people, or presently may be, has to be smashed. We alcoholics are men and women who have lost the ability to control our drinking. We know that no real alcoholic ever recovers control. All of us felt at times that we were regaining control, but such intervals, usually brief, were inevitably followed by still less control, which led in time to pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization. We are convinced to a man that alcoholics of our type are in the grip of a progressive illness. Over any considerable period, we get worse, never better. Elaine?
This reminds me when I first started coming to meetings and I didn't want to do anything. So I would go to speaker meetings because you just sit there for 45 minutes and no one bothers you. And in Williamsburg at that time, there was like, I don't know, three young people. There was like no young people. And so there was a lot of older people. And it would scare me because they would be telling my story, but then they would go on for like years after, into their like 50s and 60s. And I'm like sitting there like, oh my God, it never gets better. It's just the same thing every day for the next, you know. And at that time I was in my 20s and I'm like, are you, that's when I started learning about the slow suicide of this disease and how, you know, I was sitting there hoping I'd die soon. And I'm hearing that's not the case. Some of us die very slow for many years, you know, until we're very old, you know, and that terrified me more than dying young, to be honest with you. But the delusion that we are like other people or presently maybe has to be smashed. The second part of step one was the hardest for me. Once I kind of like started working with a sponsor, I knew pretty quick that I drank differently than others. I had been drinking differently than others since I was 14. I always outdrank everybody. You know, it was just, I drank different. People left me a lot. I really didn't have friends very often that stuck around for more than a year or two. Plus I was moving all the time because I thought geographical cures were the answer. But the second part was, you know, I just didn't think my life was unmanageable because I had a car at the time. I had a roof at the time. I had a job. And if I wanted to eat, I could, you know what I mean? Like I listed all these things that I thought made your life look fine. Cause that was my whole scheme. As long as life looks fine, everything's fine, right? Everyone will leave me alone. And that wasn't the case at all. And thank God I had a fellowship at this point, not just a sponsor. And I'm pretty big about that. I'm one of those psycho annoying AAers that are like, hi, there's a triangle and there's three sides. And I think all three of them are pretty important actually. Because all three of them at a certain time have actually saved my life. And I remember everybody talking about, I'm not exactly sure if normal people or the average person thinks about suicide all the time. I'm not exactly sure the average person starves themselves. I'm not exactly sure the average person solves their problems by cutting themselves. I'm not, you know, you don't really bathe very often, Elaine. You know what I mean? Like I was not managing life very well. I just made you guys think I was, right? But when you start looking under just half a layer of nothing, you know, it was like, you know, and that took some time for me to really realize. And I think the biggest one was, you know, I just couldn't not drink. At that point, I couldn't not drink. And I had been trying to control it. And I made my life miserable and I made everybody else's life miserable. And I was also trying to jump out of cars. So, you know, one of my dear friends in the program up here says, my desperation is the thing that's going to kill me or the thing that's going to keep me alive the most. I don't think anybody's life is pretty when they come in here. But all of the things that I wanted to run away from and shut the door on, you know, after I did the ninth step, I started to see that those things are what are going to keep me alive because, you know, all of the horrible things that I never wanted to live, I would gladly live again today if it meant I get to be who I am today. And that took every bit of every second of sobriety I have to get there. So I'll pass with that. I want to hear what Joe has to say.
Thanks, Elaine. You know, this is the beginning portion of chapter 3, more about alcoholism. And it's occasionally read at AA meetings after how it works. It goes on for about another whole page talking about the methods we try to control our drinking. You know, my experience has been that if I tried to control my drinking, then I couldn't enjoy it. And if I enjoyed my drinking, then I couldn't control it. It was that double-edged sword where I was caught between Scylla and Charybdis. And I didn't realize these things, you know, when I was in the throes of my addiction. I see it now. I see it for what it is. You know, I might have all the characteristics and symptoms of an alcoholic, but only you can decide whether or not you're an alcoholic. I like this where it talked about the first step in recovery. You know, when I said I was 23 when I first came to the rooms of AA, my dad was an alcoholic. I got to the point where I could believe that maybe I had this disease, but I really couldn't accept it. You know, up here, I could intellectualize it. Yeah, I might got this thing, but I couldn't internalize it in my heart. And I think that was one of the reasons why I relapsed and I went back out. And it's only when I took both parts of step one, you know, that I think I was able to stay sober and do these other things that we talk about on a regular basis. But if you're still not sure, you know, whether or not you're an alcoholic, try some controlled drinking. Try to stop abruptly. You know, I've done that several times, and I don't want to go back. I don't want to do it again. You know, it's a small price I pay for suiting up and showing up today and working the principles of this program. And I'll be eternally grateful for that. So that's it.
Thank you all. The next reading is on page 30, page 41. Yep, sorry about that. As soon as I regained my ability to think, and is this? This is our second to the last. As soon as I regained my ability to think, I went carefully over that evening in Washington. Not only had I been off guard, I had made no fight whatever against the first drink. This time, I had not thought of the consequences at all. I had commenced to drink as carelessly as though the cocktails were ginger ale. I now remembered what my alcoholic friends had told me, how they prophesied that if I had an alcoholic mind, the time and place would come, I would drink again. They had said that though I did raise a defense, it would one day give way before some trivial reason for having a drink. Well, just that did happen and more. For what I had learned of alcoholism did not occur to me at all. I knew from that moment that I had an alcoholic mind. I saw that willpower and self-knowledge would not help in those strange mental blank spots. I had never been able to understand people who said that a problem had them hopelessly defeated. I knew then it was a crushing blow.
So this reminds me of in early sobriety. I'm going back to early sobriety because I'm insanely active in AA today. Probably too active if you talk to my sponsor. I'm practicing saying no right now. And I don't think about drinking, even on really hard days. And I have last week was a very, very hard week and I never thought about picking up. But in early sobriety, when I did not have all these tools, I did. And I remember one of my best friends came to visit me and support me. And we had extra time in the airport before she was flying out. And my very first thought was, oh, all right, we've got extra time. What are we going to do? And I guess we'll just get some drinks. And for like a split second, there was nothing. It was, yep, fully. I think I had like 6 months. It's this point. I don't know. And I heard like a whisper of whispers. hey, maybe not. I think you're an alcoholic. You know, I mean, it was barely anything. And I didn't have a higher power at the time because I really didn't want that to be the answer. And I mean, I got so, I'm getting chills. I got so scared because I jolted. I think I physically was like, wait, I'm an alcoholic, you know? And my friend was looking at me like, what is wrong with you? And I just, I'm probably not conveying it, but it was a very scary moment for me. And then I started realizing, you know, the sandwich and the glass of milk and whiskey that we'll get into later in the book. And, you know, all these little stories, it's like, man, it is. Sometimes it's just going to come out of nowhere because that is going to be my first thought. And I resorted back to first thought wrong. You're okay. Everything is fine. You're fine. You know, because if my first thought is wrong and I accept that, okay, what's the next? what is the next thought? Because that one's rad. Let's get that out of the way, you know? But if I can't accept that my first thought is wrong, which took time, you know, then I got to tackle that, right? So thankfully, I was like, okay, first thought was wrong. Let's come up with a second thought, you know? The higher power, and, you know, I'll just quickly, the higher power stuff was really, really hard for me. Really, really hard. And I was in a lot of pain for many years because of it, because I wouldn't get out of the way. But I was able to stay sober. I stayed sober. And I stayed sober long enough with the size God I had until it needed to get bigger. And thankfully, because again, I know it's annoying, there's three sides of the triangle and I was working all three of them. I was able to stay sober and find somebody that was going to help me with the spiritual side of this program. And that has ultimately, I'm sorry to say, freed me the most. I know that you may not want that to be the answer. I didn't want it to be the answer either. But when I'm holding all three sides of the triangle, actively standing with my God, I don't know what yours is. I don't need to know. You need to know. But with my God, that is when I am happy, joyous, and free. I'm not there every day. But when I am there, and this is what my sponsor used to say all the time, that is when I get to decide if you touch me or not. Because that's when I have that kind of power, you know, and that is the sobriety that I want today. So I'll end with that. I want to hear what Joe says. Joe's so much better than me.
Thought I was muted. My dog went after my cat and it sounded like it was people were getting killed over here. But anyway, you know, this passage reminds me, you know, how badly I wanted to drink like normal people and how and not give any thought to counting my drinks or, you know, trying to control my drinking or what it would possibly do to me the next day. The alcoholic mind, the time and the place. When I first got sober up in York, Pennsylvania, the group I used to go to, there was an old timer there. And his name is Charlie. And he would say, my name's Charlie, I'm an alcoholic, and the same man would drink again. And I'd sit in the corner in the back of the room and I would mock him. You know, 23 years old, my name's Charlie, I'm an alcoholic, same man would drink again. Because I was determined not to drink again. You know, I was going to be this overnight sensation. 10 years sobriety in 10 days, you know, find the angle in AA of not, you know, working some of the steps, but not all of them. And, you know, working in my order as Joe sees it. It's a bestseller. Not. It was only after I'd gone back out that I was fortunate enough to find the rooms again in Sasebo, Japan. It was only after going back to the meetings that I realized what that man had meant. The same person will drink again. If I don't change, I will drink again. And I proved it, you know, and I share that with newcomers in the rooms that this is a simple program, you know, change everything about me. And that's what my first sponsor used to tell me. He also said that Alcoholics Anonymous is $1 million education shoved up your ass a nickel at a time. But the one thing, the bottom line is what I failed to do was enlarging my spiritual life. And when I got sober, you know, first it's physical and then I put down the drink and then it's mental. The mental obsession leaves me. And if I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing, if I'm working the steps and the program and helping others, hopefully I'll grow spiritually into that spiritual realm. They say that when you relapse, you relapse long before you physically pick up the drink. And with me, I didn't really have any spirituality, but that's the first thing that goes, the spirituality, the praying, the meditating, talking to my sponsor, talking to others. And then it becomes mental. The mental obsession starts to creep back in. You know, I start entertaining the thought of a drink because of whatever situation occurs in my life. And then finally, it's physical. I physically pick up that drink and I'm off to the races again. And I don't know when or if I'll stop. And that's a hell of a feeling. I wouldn't wish that on anybody. The alcoholic mind in the thought process, I still have that same alcoholic mind. You know, the way I like to phrase it is, you know, the monster's in the cage, but the door's unlocked. And my wife drinks. She's very spiritual. She understands a lot of the things that I go through. She's been to meetings with me before and everything. She understands us. She gets us. And I don't always get her, though. You know, she's a so-called normie. She said she's never been drunk a day in her life, which I find hard to believe, you know, but she swears. She'll have a glass of wine and she'll start to feel it. And she'll stop. She'll put ice in her wine. And I'm sitting there, you know, through the evening, an hour and a half goes by, And I'm just looking at her drink, watching the ice melt. And I'm like, are you going to drink that? That's my thought process. I don't know about you guys, but that's how I think. And she got a gift, a bottle of wine, one year for Christmas. And she finally opened it January, February timeframe. She didn't like it. She did what a normal person would do. If you don't like something, you throw it away. She starts pouring it down the drain. I about had a conniption. I was like, what are you doing? You know, she said, I don't like it. I'm pouring it down the drain. I said, don't do that. It's alcohol abuse. You know how it was when we would tough it out to get that buzz, to get it in our system, no matter what it was. You know, Boone's Farm, Old Ripple. Dave remembers that, I'm sure. But I'm just grateful life doesn't have to be that way today. All right, next reading.
All right, boy, the evening is flying. Thank you both. This is our last reading of the night, page 43. Once more, the alcoholic at certain times has no effective mental defense against the first drink, except in a few rare cases. Neither he nor any other human being can provide such a defense. His defense must come from a higher power.
So I'll just try to be quick. I talk a lot. I love this program so much. So when I came, like I said, when I came in, I did not want God to be the answer. And so I did everything. I got a home group. I did the steps. I had the sponsor. I was doing service work in my home group, outside of my home group, whatever footwork you could do, I was doing it. I wanted everybody on the peninsula to know my name. I wanted to be Miss AA. And at 5 years of sobriety, I was involved in everything. I was sponsoring. I had done these step study groups, blah, 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 blah. And at 5 years of sobriety, I wanted to kill myself in recovery. And I'd heard about it before, and I didn't believe it until it happened to me. And I remember thinking, like, I was in my car, I know exactly what street I was on. And I remember thinking, are you kidding me? Because again, I know what a drink's going to give me. So I'm not going to go back to a drink. And I was like, I really thought that I wasn't going to have to die. I really thought I was going to make it. And thankfully, I had fellowship. Thankfully, I was showing up for my service commitments, you know? And I went and I talked to somebody, and she said, welcome to the spiritual side of this program. It may save your life. And I got busy. I got real busy because I didn't want to die. And you said I didn't have to. I was just going to have to do some work I didn't want to do, probably. And that's exactly what I did. I started going to every single church in Williamsburg. I studied the Bible. I studied Buddhism. I took meditation class. I did everything. And none of it, I didn't like any of it. And at the time, I didn't realize what was going on. At the time, I didn't realize that I was taking a little from here, a little from there, a little from everywhere. I was putting the time in. And I was building a relationship that I did not know I could have with something. Because the relationship that I have with my God does not compare to the relationship that we have with humans. I sounded so ego with that. But if you understand what I'm talking about, if you have that kind of friendship like I do, it can make life worth living. I'll end there. Thank you.
My turn? Okay. You know, reading this passage, I saw the word, when I first read this, I saw the word higher power, and I knew that was code for God. You know, you guys are trying to squeeze that in there and, get it by me. One thing I've learned, when I got here, I was an agnostic at best, and I used to question everything. You know, if there's a God, if there's a higher power, you know, why do we have wars, famine, etc.? And slowly but surely, over time, you know, my higher power became group of drunks, G-O-D, and then it became good orderly direction. And today my higher power is God, as I don't always understand them. And I used to think it was a religious program, and AA is not a religious program, it's a spiritual program. And what's the difference? You know, religion is for people who don't want to go to hell, and spirituality is for people who have been there like us and don't want to go back. And this tells me, this reading, this passage tells me that I can't do it by myself. I've tried and I failed miserably. I got drunk again. And I encourage you all to read on. You know, in the next chapter, it talks about you might be suffering from an illness, which only a spiritual experience will conquer. This is the only solution for an alcoholic like me. And it also tells me the main purpose of this book. But I'm not going to, you know, spool the thunder from next week's speaker. I'll wait until he gets there and he can tell you about it for a day. The other thing I want to leave you with is in step one in the 12 and 12, the very last paragraph, it says, under the lash of alcoholism, we are driven to AA. And there we discover the fatal nature of our situation. Then and only then do we become as open-minded to conviction and as willing to listen as a dying can be. We stand ready to do anything which will lift the merciless obsession from us. You know, I've had that psychic change. I try to live my life by the HAL principle, the honesty, the open-mindedness, and the willingness. And I ask God to help me be a better person than I was the day before. And none of that's original. You know, I learned all that from you people and regular attendance at meetings. I have a higher power in my life today. I use God all the time on a regular basis. I used to think when people would talk about that, I used to think it was a sign of weakness. But it's not. It's actually a sign of strength. The obsession has left me. Like I said before, I don't think about it the way I used to. I have a healthy respect for alcohol. And I realize today that my alcoholism is actually a gift from God because I can help other people going through the throes of their addiction, you know, get clean and sober one day at a time. And anyway, that's enough out of me. Thanks, Amy.
Thank you all. That was incredible. Thank you. We are going to virtually pass the seventh tradition basket. The seventh tradition states every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their inner group, central office, local services, district, area, and the general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose, to help the alcoholic who still suffers. Our common welfare, a word about safety. Our group endeavors to provide a safe meeting place for all attendees and encourages each person here to contribute to fostering a secure and welcoming environment in which our meetings can take place. Announcements. Are there any AA-related announcements?
Elaine, alcoholic?
Elaine?
No one's going to throw a shout-out for Visky Paw? Visky, Visky, Visky! Paw, paw, paw? Nobody? All right. Visky Paw is happening the last weekend of this month in Williamsburg, Virginia. I can put the link in the chat. It's a in-person conference, so if you feel comfortable, get on with it. I'm sure there's going to be other amazing speakers, and it's just going to be awesome. So if you can come, I think you should, because conferences are awesome. So thanks.
Thanks, Elaine. Anybody else? Okay. Simple Actions is a home group. If you are interested in joining our home group or in need of a sponsor, please hang out after the meeting. Home group members, please raise your hands. If you're a little bit shy on the sponsorship or home group question, please feel free to email us at info@simpleactions.net. Sponsorship. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship, we will be available here after we close the meeting. Again, please feel free to email us at info@simpleactions.net. In closing, can we all thank Elaine and Joe again for being here tonight? Thank you both for sharing. Thanks to all who participated. I will, actually, I hope David will unmute everyone. I think we're going to do the Lord's Prayer in a jangly, crazy fashion together. And then everyone can say thank you. Oh, no, we're going to do this first to the panel. Kate, would you like to read a vision for you?
Sure, I can. If somebody can put it up.
It's up, page 164. It's up.
Okay. All right. Hi, I'm Kate. I'm an alcoholic. A vision for you. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation that what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then. Thanks.
Okay, we will now close the meeting with the Lord's Prayer. I don't know if everybody's unmuted. Is everyone unmuted? It doesn't look that way. Can you unmute yourselves?
Everyone has the ability to unmute.
Okay. Everyone who would like to participate in a rousing final prayer, please unmute yourself. Our Father. Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever.
Amen.
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 Thank you, Elaine. Thank you, Joe.
Thank you.
Thank you both.
Thank you so much.
Great so much. Thank you. Awesome.